Welcome to the Nebraska Soybean Board Weekly Market Roundup, being brought to you by Nebraska Soybean Farmers and their checkoff. I'm Susan Littlefield. A week that brought us USDA's report on Thursday. We had more issues with HPAI in two states, and the fact that, thank goodness, we've made that past the insurance planning start date. So many folks anxious to get this spring planting underway, but with it brings a close look at the markets, what's happening geopolitical, and literally what's happening in your own backyard. We've got a great show. Stick around. More's coming up after this.
Meet the champions of innovation in the heart of Nebraska. They're not just farmers, and they nurture more than just crops. Pushing boundaries and turning challenges into opportunities. They trade knowledge and know-how, and their dedication doesn't end at harvest. It's in your every bite and every drive. The future of food, fuel, and fiber, and the future of Nebraska starts right here.
Welcome back once again as we join with Jeff Peterson with Heartland Farm Partners and Sean Hackett with Hackett Financial Advisors. And gentlemen, as mentioned, it was an interesting week. Always when you can throw a big USDA report in, kind of wanted to just get a quick synopsis from each of you. Kind of give me what your highlight or the thing that caught your attention the most this week. And Sean, we'll start with you.
This report really, in my view, is never that big of a report. I mean, it's a lot of regurgitation of past information. I think the most important thing in this report usually is their take on the South American crop production. And once again, they kind of inched their way down, but did not come down as much as CONAB has come down. And it leaves a lot of question marks as to what exactly is the production going to be? What exports are they going to be able to ship out? And what does that leave left over for us to catch her up with? And so I saw, we think we got that negative bearish reaction to the report. And then today we sort of kind of got a reversal on some of this geopolitical stir that's going on in the Middle East. So I think for right now it's back to weather, planting, and I'm not sure this report's going to have a long-lasting effect, in my opinion.
So. All right, Jeff, for you.
Yeah, I think as we dig into the report, I'm actually kind of surprised, you know, really how much pressure we did end up seeing after the report came out. I think the market kind of overdid it. I mean, we got to remember, we did still pull corn stocks down. We did raise bean stocks a little bit, but the thing we got to remember is the last 2 months we have tightened up the global stocks without this last month making much of an adjustment really overall in the Brazilian corn or soybean numbers. And so I think coming on down the road, we're going to see some additional adjustments. I think we're going to see that safrinha corn crop get smaller. We're going to see that we're also going to see the Brazilian beans get smaller on production side. In addition, I think the Argentine numbers are going to work their way down further as we go forward. So that's just a few things from seeing here, Susan.
All right, Jeff, I got to quickly follow up on what you just said about this beans, because I'd read earlier in the day that there was talk about, even though Brazil will say we have less beans in the field, they always seem to have some leftover beans come post-harvest when they're exporting.
Well, this is going to be a really interesting one here because, you know, basis level-wise, we are seeing some nice basis improvement happening in South America. So we're getting to a point in here. We know they've got plenty of beans out there, but it's been encouraging for us to see that we have actually made some sales here. You know, we realize it's going to be for delivery later in our summer, but we know at some point in here they will get their beans out and ultimately the crop's going to tighten up, and then we'll be back able to make some, you know, some of the export sales. So
all right. And Sean, to piggyback on you talking about the global economy, Israel, Iran, things are going to get kind of interesting, unfortunately, and that might take a toll on us market-wise.
Well, May 7th is the inauguration of Vladimir Putin, and oftentimes these headline celebrations of leaders of that kind tend to lead to some strong action that can be taken either on their part or the part of the friends that they associate with, of which Iran is certainly one. And there's a lot of rumors going around today that there's going to be some attack on Israel, and that might lead to a broader disruption in the Middle East. What it could mean for energy, gold and silver showing some spikes to the upside, crude oil continuing to show some strength to the upside. And even today, we had kind of a broad move higher in commodities in general before sort of from profit taking here at the end of the day. So I think geopolitics leading into May 7th is going to continue to create a lot of volatility. And if that volatility offers enough upside, probably there might be some opportunities for some grain farmers to cash sell that are behind it and you do a little catching up.
Did the dollar surprise you in the way it traded on a Friday then?
The U.S. dollar?
Yeah.
Well, usually when there's greater political unrest and war unrest and adverse interactions with the world, the market looks to safety. Historically, that's been the U.S. dollar as it, given its reserve currency status. And so we are seeing that. We even saw the bond market rally today, which has struggled for a while. And we saw a big bid in the bond market today. Definitely some flight to quality today on fears that we might be going into some more significant geopolitical disruption. So not really surprised. I'm actually a little more surprised that the commodities tended to ignore the strong dollar this week for the most part and tended to be up. When you look at the Goldman Sachs commodity index, that had a nice up week, which usually is not what you see in a dollar in a week that the dollar was very strong. So there might be a decoupling here, which I think is very significant if it continues.
Jeff, what about the corn and the beans from a technical side? What are things that you're looking at?
Well, I think today's action, I mean, if we look back yesterday, if we didn't quite take out yesterday's low, we did take out yesterday's low. I'll have to go back. We just didn't take out yesterday's high. And we actually, if we look at it, probably closed right to just slightly above that downtrending line that's going to take us back a number of months. So I think actually we've got the potential setup here if we can break out of that downtrending channel. I think we'll find some additional buying. I think the funds overall, even though they're so short on corn and beans, I really do believe that they still want to work their way out of that position. So I think if we can have a little bit higher move here on the corn side, we can bring in some more buyers. And then from there, we'll have to look at, can we get our way made back basically up to that 100-day moving average, which is probably setting right now about 15 cents above us. If we get back up into that area, then I think we've got a chance to see even some more buying come in. As we come down and look at the soybean side, the soybeans have kind of got themselves set up on a May chart, kind of a downtrending channel. Yesterday, we had traded kind of the bottom side of that channel. And today, we kind of bounced up the top side. Overall, I think if we can just get a little bit of weather help behind us, I think we can actually bounce this thing out of those areas and then bring in some more buying, which will basically then bring in some more short covering, Susan.
Sean, HPII, you and I talked about this the last time you and I were on the air together, and now we've got North Carolina and South Dakota this week announced as new states. And there's a lot of states that are either closing off their borders, or they're just saying, hey, we need just extra veterinary paperwork before you bring these cattle in. How do you see this taking a toll on the marketplace, not only from a dairy perspective, but obviously from a beef perspective with these older cows?
Well, initially, the milk market sold out very, very hard on the thought process that consumers might pull back, worrying that the milk is not safe. But I do think that the media and the ag industry has done a pretty good job at saying, look, most of this milk will be kept out. And if it is not kept out, the pasteurization process, limits those risks significantly. And then the market started to notice or worry about how much we're losing production on these infected cows in the first 30 to 45 days and how that could create an air pocket of supply. And we've seen this big bounce in the nearby price. So it looks to me like we've shifted from demand side worries to supply side worries. And I think that's the right place for the milk market to be. In terms of the cattle market, I don't really think we're going to see significant herd liquidation in the dairy sector unless things get much further out of control. I think it's going to be more of a slow bleed, and I don't think that's really going to filter into negativity. I think the negativity in the cattle market is really simply a market that was overbought, got into a secondary top, rolled over, speculators started to sell, technicals started to break down, and we have a lot of animals on feed. We have the weight starting to gain on a warm finish to the winter, and consumers I just don't think are going to chase a beef cutout price over 300. And I think that's where we stand, and we're stuck in kind of a trading range through the spring, it looks to me, in the cattle market.
Jeff, what about the consumer price index? I mean, the CPI came out this week, and obviously it's been talked about with some stress factors added in.
Yeah, so it's interesting to watch. I mean, I think that definitely comes into play. If you look at it from our market side, traditionally it always said that the commodities can be a good hedge against inflation. But deep down, though, I really think that we have to have more than that. In my mind, ultimately, the speculative traders still have to see something that it's either from a fundamental side or something really strong from the technical side in order for them to step in and buy. And so as a result, I think we're going to have to see something more from that. One of the things that I look at, Susan, as you talk about the CPI, is that down the road, you know, I get concerned here with the basically geopolitical risks that we end up having here with Iran and also with Israel, and what kind of attacks we could see there. And then what does that end up doing to the crude oil price? We know that that's going to, you know, drive up that CPI number too, Susan.
All right. Well, as you and I'll, we're talking, you guys can't hear it, but there's a corn planter that just went down our gravel road. So weather's going to be a huge factor once again. Hopefully the Western Corn Belt coming off of this continued 4-year drought that we've had to deal with. I want to get both your thoughts as we wrap this up. Sean, we'll start with you. What's your takeaway for spring weather?
All our work for the growing season says that where we're most likely going to have hot, dry weather, unfortunately, is going to be center west, center north, northwest, Canadian prairies. That's our high probability forecast based upon a developing La Nina, some cold sea surface temperatures in the Pacific, and some warm sea surface temperatures in the North Atlantic. It's all setting up for, unfortunately, more of a repeat of the West getting the short end of weather. And I think that's the thing I'm a little more worried about this year is that some high record warm temperatures might actually come into the Midwest this year that we didn't see or haven't seen in a while. And that is something like 2012 when we had those 100 degree temperatures. We think there's a good chance we might see that as we approach July. And that's something that the market would definitely pay attention to. They've gotten used to dry weather not hurting the crop as much as it has in the past, but not if we get 100 degree temperatures, we can still hurt the crop. That's what we're paying attention to.
All right, Jeff, for you.
Well, I think, you know, as we look at the weather here, that's going to be the big driving force going forward here. And ultimately, I think Sean hit on some very good points of some concerns on what the dry conditions, warm conditions could be. What we do know is that even though we've have picked up some moisture, we have seen some drought improvement, we know that we physically don't have enough subsoil moisture. We're still going to need definitely more moisture to get us through. So I think weather will definitely come into play as we go forward.
All right, gentlemen, I wish you guys both a great weekend. It's supposed to be in the 80s here in the Midwest. And Sean, I hope you have gotten past the Florida mugginess and can enjoy a great weekend as well.
It looks like it's going to be gorgeous here, and definitely looking forward to a nice weekend with my family for sure.
All right. You all have a great season. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Sean. Quick reminder, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that's the Nebraska Soybean Board Weekly Market Roundup.